Technicians of Spaceship Earth, welcome to Hawk Binge and a new podcast series from Hawk Binge, taking a look at Hawkwind's chart classics, one single at a time, which means that this is both the first ever and final episode in that series, because there is only one chart hit for Hawkwind, and this is it. So prepare to dive into Silver Machine with a longtime fan, which is me, and someone who had not heard Silver Machine before, which is Matt. How's life, Matt?
I'm good, thanks. Everything is still snowy and crazy here, which just brings me into a very quick apology about the weird sound that we had in the last episode. The problem from moving from a nice cabin in the outskirts of Portland to a one-bedroom apartment in New York means that you're fighting with noises like air conditioning and dogs and all that kind of stuff. So I'm trying very hard to stabilize the sound. And I'm also moving to a new place which actually has much better acoustics in the future. But for the next couple of episodes, I'm afraid we might sound like a 70s Hawkwind recording for a while. And I hope that that improves going forward.
Are you not in your makeshift blanket tent this time?
I tried that again today and realized that my AC is just way too powerful for a very fine gauge of linen that I was trying to hide under in order to make a kind of sound baffle.
You need to tune the AC so that it sounds like the kind of backing that Hawkwind tracks have during this era.
The issue is that it's completely fine until it kicks in, and then it just absolutely destroys my microphone. I'm still dealing with minus centigrade temperatures over here, so I kind of need to have it on, otherwise my apartment freezes and you'll either have the sound of aircon or the sound of my teeth. So it's a difficult gamble to figure out, but I've turned it all off now, so hopefully this is fine, which is mercifully useful for being such a short episode.
Yes, fair play. And we're having to do this bonus episode because, of course, Silver Machine, their biggest hit, is a non-album single, which is very strange. So we would have just bypassed this completely, just doing the studio albums, which would seem a bit churlish, really, given that the songs feature so strongly in Hawkwind history. And Matt, we talked about version control earlier on. I'm obviously so familiar with this track that I just completely took it for granted. But we nearly had a bit of a podcast catastrophe, did we not?
Yeah, I should have asked you this a long time ago, but I've spent most of the week listening to the Silver Machine version on Choose Your Masks, which just happened to be the first one that came up on iTunes. So I was listening to it thinking, this is weird, coming straight out of the previous album. I can't believe they went from In Search of Space to predicting what the 80s would sound like 10 years ahead of their time. I was thinking, well, no wonder this was a hit. This is visionary. And then going through some further research and going through Discogs to try and find some album artwork for the podcast, I realized there were a lot more versions, and I had to text you and ask if I was listening to the right one, and got a very quick message back from you saying, yeah, that's totally wrong.
Yeah, I remember saying it's this one and then thinking, what have you been listening to? It's fair to say this would have been a very, very different podcast episode, and we would have been disagreeing with each other on many, many points, I suspect.
Yeah, I wonder how long it would have taken us to realise what had happened if I hadn't checked that out.
Probably once I started talking about Lemmy's voice. That could have been interesting. So yes, a potential rookie error on your part, but I believe you have some vengeance in mind for me.
Yeah, so last episode, you called me out when I said in the very first episode that I thought that I had heard one track from Hawkwind before, which was Silver Machine on a couple of car ads. And you hit back telling me that it was actually Master of the Universe that I had heard on car ads. And then doing a little bit of cursory research, I found that Silver Machine had been on a car ad in 2000 for a Mazda car. So I had heard it before, even though I got it wrong that I was 16 when I heard it and not around 8, which is when I thought I had heard it.
I feel a deep sense of shame for my unforgivable schoolboy error. I've brought shame on the podcast. I feel I've let the podcast down. I've let my family down. And worst of all, I've let myself down. The other thing you told me was that it had been used in an advert for Red Square Alcopops. I was drinking Red Square Alcopops during my Alcopops phase, which obviously, as we both know, I'm still in. So I was listening to Hawkwind and drinking Red Square Alcopops and still didn't know that Silver Machine had been used as an advert there. So let's never speak of these things again.
I wish I could find the ads, but they seem to be lost to history. I thought everything was on the internet.
Yeah, it's such a shame.
If I can find it, I'll add it to the social networks that we're on, because it's I'm kind of excited to see what Red Square did with this.
Yeah, same. And I'm actually just hoping that Mazda actually did use a silver car. Otherwise, there would be all kinds of disappointment.
Which brings me to an interesting point, doing further research as well as trying to find ways to call you out on the podcast. I was looking on discogs.com, which is a very useful resource for music and collecting, to try and find some artwork for the Silver Machine single, to find that there are literally 16 different artworks that span the entire Hawkwind discography. So you have the ones that came out in the 70s, then the 80s, then re-releases. I found a quite a cool design that they did exclusively for Japan. But the thing I wanted to call to attention is that they have quite a few of these which are just pictures of the band hanging out, which is what you would expect, I guess, from a single. There is one which has the artwork for Do Re Mi La Fa Slatino, which we haven't got to yet, and I've got wrong. Which is weird, considering that it's not on the album. So it's weird that that bit of artwork is kind of a precursor. But the three graphic versions of the single I could find, one which has Silver Machine on the front, but it actually has a red car on the artwork, which, again, makes no sense. There's one which is very cool, which is like this neon spaceship with this kind of computer font on it, which I really like. It looks, again, a bit Space Force-y, but I'm assuming that's the 80s version, just given the graphics. I don't know, but it's very much a spaceship, even though the spaceship is blue, so we'll ignore that again. And then there's one which is a guy on a motorbike. It looks like a Harley Davidson kind of chopper. It looks a little bit 80s still, with the kind of chrome work and everything, but at least it is silver. So this was the first thing I was thinking about when we were thinking about Silver Machines, is it's very vague. And what sort of machine are we talking about? It seems like even the band can't agree, or whether or not the artists for the covers did whatever they felt like. So I have my own theories, which we'll get into, but I immediately got very confused.
Yeah, this is one of those where I think if you look too deeply into it, you're going to end up way, way off piste, because apparently this is written by Robert Calvert as something of a parody of articles about time machines, and it's actually about a bicycle. And in keeping with the rest of our podcast episodes, I've done minimal research on this, clearly. Basically, this is just kind of what I've read over the years and what I understand of it. But yes, it's a bicycle, and then obviously dressed up in a lot of Calvert-esque lines, which I do like. I love the language in this. So let's go back to the genesis of this track, which was actually a show that they played, a benefit show for a charity called the Greasy Truckers. And it's a Greasy Truckers gig, which became fairly famous. They played this gig on the 13th of February, 1972. And on the bill with them are Mann, Brinsley Schwartz, and Magic Michael, none of whom I'm particularly familiar with. And they did a set there that produced a double album. And Hawkwind are on side four of that double album. I have it. And I remembered that much. And it caused me to actually get the album out, probably for the first time in about 30 years. Because I don't think I may have bought this at a record fair or something, because it had Hawkwind on it, but almost certainly not played it. It has excellent versions of Master of the Universe and Born to Go on it, but it doesn't have Silver Machine on it, which confused me slightly before I looked it up, and then actually realized that Silver Machine was played at this gig, and the version of Silver Machine, which is released as a single, uses that performance as a basis, but is quite heavily tweaked and overdubbed and with some added effects. And the best piece I've found about this is actually from Joe Banks in his book, Hawkwind, Days of the Underground, Radical Escapism in the Age of Paranoia, which we liberally refer to throughout. But this is what he says about the performance of Silver Machine at this gig. And I quote, "But these aren't the most important recordings made at this event. New song Silver Machine is a powerful slab of interstellar boogie, which always gets a good reaction. There's a clanging of strings and cymbals before the riff kicks in, and Calvert seems to forget both his words and where the microphone is. Turner joins in, but sounds jostled, as though in the midst of a stage invasion. They pretty much miss the chorus altogether, which nevertheless drags on aimlessly, and yet despite its shambolic nature, there's still something about that riff." End quote. And that really just makes me want to hear that version of the track, because that sounds hysterical to me. And it has since emerged on a 2007 box set remaster of the Greasy Truckers album, where the whole Hawkwind show features. So that's one to dig out. But they take that into the studio in June of 1972, at which point Calvert apparently is sidelined for a while, dealing with some mental problems that he is having at that time. So they run through some different people to do the vocal, and no one can really nail it until one Lemmy Kilminster enters the arena and nails this vocal. And I really can't imagine this with any other voice than Lemmy's. It just feels such a natural fit for him, as does the whole track. It's then released and ends up reaching number 3 on the charts. Now, we're not really going to get into too much about other singles that are released in 1972 like we do with the albums in the years, but we do actually have to hand the top 10 in the week that Silver Machine reaches number 3. So, pop pickers, let's go sideways through time back to the 13th of August 1972. It's Top of the Pops. In at number 10, it's 4 in the Morning by Farron Young.
Up 19 to number 9, it's Run to Me by the Bee Gees.
At number 8, it's Sylvia's Mother by Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show.
Our highest climber of the week, jumping up 23 places to number 7, it's You Wear It Well by Rod Stewart.
Down 3 places at number 6, Breaking Up Is Hard to Do by the Partridge Family, and They Should Know.
Coming in at number 5, it's Popcorn by Hot Butter, a thing I have never ever heard of in my entire life.
And at number 4, oh no, Puppy Love by Donny Osmond. Good grief.
Up 7 places at number 3, it's Silver Machine by Hawkwind.
Stop the count. We have a winner. There's surely no need to go any further.
Andy, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to insist that all purchases that occurred this week are counted. Which means that at number 2, we have a new entry, Seaside Shuffle by Terry Dactyl and the Dinosaurs. And I'm starting to wish I never said that we should continue counting.
Yeah. And at number 1, bringing some dignity to proceedings, School's Out by Alice Cooper.
What a week to be alive.
It's not too bad. If you can't be number 1 and School's Out by Alice Cooper is number 1, that is respectable. There are some others. I mean, I remember Vienna by Ultravox. Whether you like it or not, obviously it was a big song, and it was kept off the number 1 spot by Shut Up or Your Face. Just a novelty song, which was awful. If they'd been kept off the number 1 spot by Puppy Love by Donny Osmond, I think the band would just have had to break up there and then.
It's very weird looking at the top 10s when you think of them as just pure what people are buying. You know, like regardless of genre of that, it's pure culture. So the fact that Hawkwind can jump in from a band which I feel like very few people would have known still to get into number 3, and not only number 3, but to have climbed that many places from the previous week means that more people would have heard it on the radio, I'm assuming, and then gone and bought it. It's actually really interesting.
Yeah, this does seem like an era where singles can actually climb the charts rather than just kind of burst in at a high number and then steadily decline. As it's you know, some of those songs have been on the charts for weeks, even Puppy Love by Donny Osmond, God help us all. And it made number 3 in number 72. They re-released it again in 76 and in 78, where it got to number 34, which is respectable. And again in 83, with this different version, where it got to number 67. So it seems that this is the only chart hit they had, because having had this chart hit, they couldn't be bothered to record any other chart hits. It's like, we need another chart hit. No, it ain't broke. Don't fix it. Just put the last one out.
The vague attempt to make lightning strike several more times.
Now, we have talked about the fact that there is a different new voice on this track. And the third voice we've heard, having heard Brock and Turner singing before, and that is Lemmy. So Lemmy comes into this band as the bass player. The previous bass player had left. Lemmy came in really as a rhythm guitarist playing the bass, which is why he has that kind of extraordinary tone that he brings to proceedings that makes everything really just sound like Lemmy. And they have a new drummer, Simon King. I think it's unmissable that there is a different drummer on this than had been on anything else. This is very much a rock backbeat kind of a drummer than what we had before in Terry Ollis. The rest of the band is very familiar. Brock Turner, Dick Mick, and Dale Detmar make up the rest of the band. And at this point, we are going to find out Matt's hot take on this and see if Matt is still feeling mean.
So I can see why this became their hit. If there's any track that I've heard them play, this is much more catchy, much more mainstream feeling. Not necessarily in a poppy kind of way, but just in a way where you can just see how it's been put together really nicely. Like you said, it has a solid groove through it. It has a lot of energy. It's, again, surprising to me, just given that we've just listened to In Search of Space. This almost feels like a Hurry on Sundown kind of track, not in its content, but just how different it is to the direction that it felt like they were pursuing, which now is interesting for me because I feel that every time I put on a new Hawkwind record, I have no idea what to expect. So the idea that they can just grab whatever they feel like and go, that's one of our records, is actually quite interesting. It was frustrating for a while, I think. I think maybe the OCD in me was trying to pigeonhole them very early, but the fact that they're just doing stuff and mix people and ideas and energies is becoming more interesting to me. So the fact that they made this no longer surprises me. I can see why this was more of a hit than, say, Master of the Universe. I think Master of the Universe has a slightly more underground kind of vibe. It still rolls along. Somehow Silver Machine feels a bit more of the time. So I can see why it worked. It feels like a very vocal-led tune, like you said. I can't see this working unless you have the singer really take the lead of the track. You're right, Lemmy really brings something to it that is that secret ingredient. And given that we now know how successful Lemmy and Motorhead are, it just feels like he's got that kind of golden touch that he can come into a band and just add this extra layer which catapults what they're doing into another stratosphere which makes them a chart success. So because it is something that I've heard before, it is a little bit more familiar, but I have been mainlining both the wrong and right versions of this for a week. And when you corrected me, I've only been listening to the right version for a day, and it's actually a lot nicer. Weirdly, comparing the two, it makes me realize how much I just prefer 70s rock compared to what the 80s does to that kind of music in the near future.
Yeah, it definitely has that rawness to it. And that's interesting because although Calvert wrote this, I don't think it could possibly have sounded like this either in terms of the vocals or the music without Lemmy's particular brand of playing it, simply because at its heart, this is a pretty kind of heavy, bluesy rock and roll number. And it almost makes me think that it's like a proto Motorhead track than it is Hawkwind in that respect. Protohead, I think, possibly is a term I've just come up with.
How far is this before Motorhead appear?
This 72, Motorhead is, I think, 76.
Okay, so there's a while before Lemmy really comes into his own.
Absolutely. And they don't really do anything quite like this again. But there are definitely conversations that we'll have about that. He does have a big impact. That new rhythm section, I think, him with Simon King is also really important, I think, in this track. It really does work. And it's funny, I came into us doing this bonus episode and I was pretty blasé about it. I'm so familiar with Silver Machine. I've heard it so often. Like, it's always the track that you will hear on radio or in compilations, a bit like Paranoid from Black Sabbath. It's just the one that people play or that people know. And I've heard it so often, I wasn't going to bother to listen to it for this episode because I just know it so well. And my feelings about it were that I kind of like it. It's all right. But it probably wouldn't be in like a top 20 Hawkwind tracks I'd put together. Just that familiarity that I have with it, I suppose. But then today I actually did put the headphones on and play it loud just to due diligence more than anything else. And I actually found myself smiling and really getting into it like I'd kind of reconnected with an old friend, basically, and just picked up so many things in it that I really liked. Even at the end, whoever it is screaming, "Super Machine!" in that voice. I just really liked it and played it 4 or 5 times over when I had no need to.
I think to your point just there, the exuberance that this has, like that little person just shouting, "Silver Machine!" I completely agree. And I think the difference between this and Master of the Universe, which I feel like is the track I compare it to just because of its similar construction and vibe, is that Master of the Universe is very downy, which is where you get the kind of doomy bit. And the vocals are much more droney. You know, they don't have a huge amount of character, where this one, all of the changes in the chords are up. Even the vocals, they start and, you know, the start of the word and the end of the word flick up. So it's always sounding like it's rising and rising. So it just has a very different energy. It has an exuberance to it, which the other tracks don't in the same way. They feel much more shoegazy and much more like introspective, where this one just feels like it's trying to burst out of itself.
It's going to be interesting when we get to Space Ritual, which is the live album that we'll do a bonus podcast for. You hear some of those tracks being played by this rhythm section and the impact that they have. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one.
One thing I was really impressed with was the fact they could get Antiseptically Clean as a lyric into a pop record, or a record which ends up being popular. I thought that was quite impressive. Does Antiseptically Clean, well, it's a five-syllable word, which I don't feel you get much in pop music. But also I feel like just the phrase Antiseptically Clean hits different listening to it now in COVID. I feel like, yeah, I want to go there.
Yes,
I want to go into this Silver Machine if it's antiseptic. That sounds very, very useful.
49 years ahead of their time, for sure, on that score.
And irregardless of whether or not they say it's a motorbike or a car, I still feel that given the person who wrote the vocals, I feel like there's a spiritual connection, if not a production or energy connection to the logbook. I do feel that if you don't know that they're being silly, that you could assume that the Silver Machine could refer to the Hawkwind as it goes through time. You know, they are talking about time. They are talking about the other side of the sky. They're talking about zodiac signs, which again is a big thing in the logbook. So I do feel that, again, in terms of what connects it to Hawkwind, yep, the effects for sure, but also just the tone and the content, even though the energy and the production are very different, there's a nub of Hawkwind in there, which again makes you feel like it's a worthy addition to the band's discography.
Yeah, very much so. It's definitely, there's a great language, I think, that Calvert has in the writing. And it's interesting that this has kind of reappeared more recently for me in the live canon for Hawkwind. So when I was seeing them play in the 90s, I didn't hear this very often. There were a few occasions when Lemmy joined them on stage, because they did continue to be mates even after he was fired. And he would join them on stage and play Silver Machine. It was always good fun. But recently they've played it a little bit more, and they played a pretty good version of it on the 50th anniversary. There's something about that voice that hard to hear this song being sung by anybody else. And talking about voices, did you by any chance listen to the B-side, 7x7?
Yeah, I was really interested in seeing what they would choose to put on the B-side, whether or not they would have a track which goes back to the album in a kind of sales pitch, but it's not. It's something completely different again, and it's something which is very different to the A-side. I feel like a bit like what they did with We Took the Wrong Step years ago, they've gone into another genre and created Space Lounge.
Yeah, so I grew up hearing Silver Machine on the jukebox at the pub that I was hanging out in. And obviously 7x7, the B-side, I used to play that a lot and really, really loved 7x7. And then I realized that the version of 7x7 that I'd grown up listening to was from a future release of the single. And it's the version of 7x7, which is on Space Ritual, the live version. And when I heard this version, it's quite shocking to hear Dave Brock desperately straining to hit notes that he really has no business going anywhere near.
True, but I do think there's, again, a real passion in the delivery, which we haven't heard. It's almost not punky, but it has that kind of real garage vibe to it, which I thought was really interesting. Again, it sounds almost pained, you know, that there is that feeling to it, which, again, doesn't feel like what we've heard before in the Hawkwind. And again, given how then the track dissolves into the B section, it's very surprising again, because it kind of goes into this poetry spoken word weird thing, which really reminded me somehow Frankie Goes to Hollywood or something. I was thinking that this is, again, very, very different. I think it's the first time I've started to hear that possible like theatrical element. There's bits where he talks about this guy called Pocus. He says Pocus laughs. It's like, well, who the hell is that? You know, there's a lot of stuff in here which again feels even weirder than the logbook. It feels more like Lord of the Ringsy or something, like 7 is a very mystical number, repeating all that kind of stuff. I kind of started to ignore what was being said and just listening to the delivery, and the delivery is really cool, especially at the beginning and the end.
It's definitely going to be intriguing to see what you make of Space Ritual when we get that far.
This track also feels like it's the first time that the audio effects or the audio generator take a lead. There's a part where we go from the A section into the B section where the guitar is just doing its thing, and it feels like it becomes more of a background element, and the what sounds like a theremin, I don't know if it is a theremin or something very theremin-like, that actually takes the lead line for a while. And that's really the first time it feels like it isn't just something which is put on top. It feels like it's integrated. And even in the mix, it feels more integrated. So that, again, was interesting from a progression point of view. It was something I was looking forward to, because even things like We Took the Wrong Step, it's nice, but it feels, again, like it's somehow separated in the mix, and it's there to provide hawk windiness in the same way that you put pepper on a dish. This feels like it's integrated.
Yeah, that's a good shout, actually. I mean, we've said before that a song kind of becomes a hawkwind song when you add those swishy, swirling noises in. And that's even true of Silver Machine, really, because it is it's a boogie until you add all of those synthesized effects in. And here, you're right, it is much more integral to the song itself, which is good to see. And hopefully we'll see more of that, and you'll see more of that as we get through some of the albums.
I feel like it needs to. Otherwise, it will just be, like I said, the garnish. I'm looking forward to seeing how it incorporates, because I feel like that's when they'll be able to really feel like they own it. Because, of course, at some point, anyone can get hold of a synthesizer, and they need to grab something which allows them to own that rather than just be the band that happened to do it first.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously we're not picking songs from an album to go to your master list. So there's really it's a bit of a binary question. Does Silver Machine make your Hawkwind master playlist or not?
I think it does. I think after snubbing Master of the Universe, it feels like we need one of these. I also feel like even if it's not the track which I would go for all the time, maybe because of its overexposure, it is a pivotal moment for the band, bringing in new people that clearly influence it. I might reserve judgment for whether or not 7x7 goes in, depending on how I feel about the next album.
Yes, and we will find out, because those playlists will be curated by your good self and made available after the next album that we get to. We would love to hear from you out there and your views. What do you think of Silver Machine? Heard it too often or a firm favourite? We have actually heard from a number of you. It's great to hear that people are listening and enjoying what we're doing. I'm sure Matt and I could amuse each other indefinitely. But it's also brilliant just to learn that we're not just screaming into the void, and there are people picking up on this. So thanks very much for all your messages. And if you are going to get in touch, tell us how horribly wrong we've got it and correct our other unforgivable schoolboy errors. Then where can they do that, Matt?
So you can find us on Instagram and Twitter. We are at HawkBinge on both those places. And if you want to send us an electric line, our email address is podcast@hawkbinge.space.
Cool. Thank you very much. And on that note, then, we will see you on the other side of the sky with Do Re Mi. Into the top 10 comes Farron Young with It's 4 in the Morning.
Up 19 to place... Sorry, that was... Wow.
Do you want to start the top 10 again? That was excellent.
Oh, God, it's like I can't read.
That was excellent.